With 60-degree weather and Brewers baseball, spring has officially arrived in Wisconsin. Advanced apologies in case it snows next week, although I'm knocking on wood that snowy days are done. I'm Katie O'Connell, and you're listening to Behind the Headlines from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up in today's show, we'll hear from our ace political team with an update on the state budget. We'll also hear from assistant opinion editor Ernie Franzen on a brand new newsletter from his team. Since I mentioned Brewers baseball, we might as well head in that direction first. The Journal Sentinel has a new Brewers podcast. It's called just that, in case you're looking for it, the Milwaukee Brewers Podcast. Matt Velasquez of the Bucks Podcast is our host for the Brewers show as well. And we've got beat reporters Todd Rosiak and Tom Hodricor contributing too. One of the regular segments they'll have on the show is a question and answer segment with the writers. Here's what the guys had to say about the behind-the-scenes experience of covering spring training.
This all transitions very well, just kind of into, you know, a regular topic that we want to discuss on the podcast, which is kind of just the life of being a baseball writer and what it means and what it takes and what kind of the little nuances and things are. So, you know, you guys alluded to it earlier in the, you know, not really being home for 6 weeks and eating Boston Market every day and kind of living that life, you know, kind of give us some more examples of kind of what it's like on a day-to-day basis of covering spring training and kind of how do you manage your time and what do you do and kind of all that stuff. I'm really interested to find out.
I don't want to give up the idea, but I guess I am. I think this would make for a thrilling reality show. They should put a camera in our condo for 6 weeks and just see how glamorous it is, our lives that we lead covering spring training, because let me tell you, it's amazing. But, you know, that of course is a joke. It's very tough living away from home for that amount of time. And I know that people do it for much, much longer periods of time and under much worse circumstances, you know, namely our servicemen and women around the world. So trust me, this is no great sacrifice that we're making here. But, you know, it being away from home and being away from your family and your loved ones and your friends and your pets and whatever else you have, it's tough to do. The thing that made it nice this year, we had a very nice place to stay, a very nice condominium, and in a nice area in the Biltmore area in Phoenix. So when you have a really nice home base to call home for that amount of time, it makes a huge amount of difference. And obviously, you know, getting along with your coworker is a big thing. And Tom, I think, you know, Tom would agree that we get along well and we kind of play well off of each other. So it kind of becomes almost, you know, like a, I don't want to say like a high school type deal, but like, you know, it's kind of fun. I mean, you're away and you're, you know, we're doing baseball pretty much 24/7 and, you know, we're able to, you know, the little downtime that we have, you know, Monday and Tuesday nights, we'd watch WWE Raw, WWE SmackDown. You know, we get together with some of our people down there that we know, some of the Brewers personnel and whatnot that had similar interests. And so you
tell
kind of, about, it's,
Todd, go ahead. Tell them how much I like all the talking on WWE.
Yeah. Tom's not a big, fan of all the promos, and especially, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman. I am the advocate for the beast incarnate, Brock Lesnar. Tom's head would spin off his shoulders every time that guy would pop up on the screen. But
I call him Alfred, because the guy looks like Alfred Hitchcock. He's a spitting image of Al Paul. He's a spitting image. I expect a bunch of birds to start flying out of the screen every time.
But, you know, that, I mean, it may, you know, of course, you know, wrestling is what it is, and, you know, some people don't like it. I get it. But it's the point of the discussion here is that, you know, we're working long hours, long days, you know, just to give you an idea, we're out the door 7:30 every morning and, you know, at the ballpark all day. We're generally getting home between 5:30 and 6 every night and fighting brutal traffic both ways, you know, morning rush hour, evening rush hour, and a lot of baseball in between. So when you get that downtime, it's crucial to kind of take advantage of it and, you know, try to relax a little bit. And I'm fortunate enough to, you know, I have a group of people down there that likes to go hiking and stuff. So I get out there and definitely enjoy the trails. And, you know, we did Camelback, we did Squaw Peak this year several times. And those few off days are really nice. We do have work to do on those, but by and large, they're, you know, kind of our days to unwind and relax a little bit. So that's important too. So Tom, I'll let you go. I'm kind of rambling on here. If you want to pick up on anything that I missed or riff off of anything that I said, feel free.
Well, I think the most interesting thing about spring training for us is that, to borrow a phrase from Forrest Gump, our spring training condos are kind of like a box of chocolates. You never know what's going to be in there. Didn't Forrest Gump say that?
Just about. Yeah, you're pretty close.
Yeah, but because we bounce around and we you know book these things online and we try to be financially
responsible,
and so we never actually know what we're getting until we get down there, because we never have the same one 2 years in a row. And I would just like to mention, we had an all-timer 3 years ago, or was it 2 years ago, north of Maryville, Todd? We were north of Maryville.
That was 2 years ago, 2015. Right. We were in Glendale there.
Here's what made that condo interesting, Matt. These are supposed to be furnished condos. The owner of the condo and the realtor representing that condo did not believe trash cans were part of a furnished apartment. Lighting in my bedroom, there was no lights. The cookware had crusted old food in it and was only about three pots in there anyway. So what they called a furnished condo, Sasquatch would have complained about. So you just never know. But
the air conditioning broke three times. The plumber had to come once. So our experiences are definitely colored by where we live. You know, I mean, when you're working, you know, 10-hour days, you're looking forward to being able to come back to a comfortable place and have a comfortable bed and a place where you can rely on the air conditioning. And when you can't even rely on that and you don't get any response from the landlord and the realtor, then it becomes 10 times more stressful than it is anyway.
If you have a question you'd like our Brewers writers to answer, tweet it with the hashtag JSBrewers. Again, that's hashtag JSBrewers. You can listen to the full episode in iTunes, Stitcher, and Audioboom. Be sure to subscribe as well. Can Republican Governor Scott Walker agree with fellow Republicans about plans to fund transportation and public schools? That's the central question surrounding this round of budget negotiations. To answer this question, reporter Mary Spacuzza sat down with reporters Jason Stein and Bill Glauber, as well as columnist Daniel Bice.
I'm joined in the studio by columnist Daniel Bice and reporter Bill Glauber, and in Madison, Jason Stein is here to join us. Hi, Jason.
Good to be here, thanks.
So Republicans control everything at the Capitol, but they don't agree on everything when it comes to the state budget. How are negotiations going? Jason, what do you think?
Right. So to be clear, they've got control of all of state government, and the only thing that they need to do to pass a budget is get an agreement amongst themselves. But it's harder to do than it might seem. And the things that they're disagreeing the most on is, number one, transportation. There's a lot of back and forth sniping over how do you fix the hole in the road fund? Do you raise taxes or do you just delay and cut projects? And then there's also some back and forth over whether or not to take the large increases for K-12 schools that Scott Walker wants. Seems like Senate Republicans are willing to go along with those. Assembly Republicans are clearly wanting to pare those back some. And then last, they all agree that they want to cut taxes, but they don't yet agree on how to do it. Scott Walker has really talked about cutting taxes for broadly for you know, in small amounts for large groups of people in the state. Some Republicans have kicked around the idea of targeting those tax cuts more, possibly, you know, doing some things that would only impact certain, like, say, business owners or people like that to a greater degree.
It seems like there's been quite a bit of fighting over roads and the order of projects. We heard from business leaders saying they wanted one project done. Assembly seems to be focused on something else. The Senate. Where are people at when it comes to road funding?
You know, it's really tough to see how they solve this because they have a bunch of possible solutions and they don't want any of them. You know, I don't think they... there really is very limited appetite to raise the gas tax. There's maybe a little appetite among some to raise fees for vehicles, but not a lot of that. And then you've got borrowing. They don't really want to borrow. You've got cutting road projects or delaying them. That's also not very popular. You had some big businesses like Miller Coors and Palermo's Pizza that just on Tuesday were writing a letter to lawmakers and saying, hey, look, don't delay the Interstate 94 East-West project west of downtown Milwaukee.
Go ahead.
There's no solution for them. There's no good solution for them.
So you were at the hearing yesterday. What was that like?
Yeah, so yesterday's hearing, it was interesting because a lot of the lawmakers were kind of fighting amongst themselves about transportation. But members of the public, while some did weigh in on transportation, a lot of them were saying we need more funding for public schools. There was a heavy presence of school administrators, teachers, students, and parents. And it was interesting because I think that after, you know, several years of budget cuts, they are very hungry to see Walker's proposal to send more money back towards schools. We'll see if Republicans in the Assembly and Senate agree with that plan and if they can come up with one that they all are comfortable with.
So there's control and then there's control. And right now there's, well, you know, if there isn't a new funding source, the issue becomes priority. And that's what seems to be going on with Robin Voss and the Milwaukee business community. One has one priority, which is to fix the interstate near Racine. But Robin Voss is in the Milwaukee business community, wants to get the zoo interchange completed right here.
It's amazing all the projects they took on at the same time. Now they got to pay for them. That's what's occurring. I think the education piece of it is very interesting. Scott Walker has been on a tour of public schools lately, so education funding clearly important for him as he sees his reelection in 2018. Clearly trying to push more money into education, and then seems to be getting pushback in the legislature.
Well, we saw in the Marquette poll that funding for schools was a very, very popular issue. But in terms of increasing funding for roads, gas tax not popular, borrowing not popular, taking money from other agency was the only option the public likes. But of course, they didn't say which agencies or which funding.
Yeah, the reality, too, for schools is that if you look at school districts all around the state, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in referendums getting passed or getting at least put before voters this spring. And so, you know, I think the governor's proposal is clearly in some ways a relief valve to have the state try and come in and take some of that burden off of local taxpayers. And that's, you know, one reason why I think you see it out there in the first place.
Actually, in the Milwaukee area, most of the referendums went down in the Milwaukee area, like in Menominee Falls and so forth. So I'm wondering if, you know,
wheel tax was not a hit, obviously, here.
Yeah, and the wheel tax wasn't. It seems like the public has done, at least in this area, enough, they feel, on the referendums, and they believe somebody else should be putting in the money.
That audio comes from our weekly JS on Politics show. The full version of that show is available as a podcast in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and all of the usual places. If you're interested in our political coverage, be sure to subscribe. We're capping off today's show with a chat with opinion editor Ernie Franzen. Ernie and his counterpart Dave Haynes have developed a newsletter for those seeking more of our opinion coverage. Here's Ernie with a look at that. So I am joined today by Fountain of Youth and Positivity, Ernie Franzen.
You bet. That's me, in a nutshell.
And Ernie, so you're on our opinions team.
I'm the associate editorial page editor.
Well, if you want to get fancy with it, Ernie, I suppose that is what you are.
Or the associate opinions editor. How's that?
There we go. That's a little less bougie. So, Ernie, you guys have a new newsletter that you've put together, and I'm wondering what was the inspiration or reason you wanted to create this newsletter?
And it's actually the brainchild of David Haynes, the editorial page editor, or the opinions editor, as we also call him. And the idea is to send an email to subscribers. You have to sign up for it. But to give them, and to especially to give print readers an opportunity to look at stuff that's not in print anymore. We've trimmed what we do in print, and but we're doing more online. So we want to give readers an opportunity to have access to that. And so there are links in it. The first email went out last Tuesday morning. That's when they arrive in your mailbox. And the first one was written by Dave. He did the Election Day takeaway. He offered some opinions on that. What were we keeping an eye on this week? You know, in this case, it was the public hearings on Walker's budget. We offer a letter of the week and offer other links to material that's online.
And are you hoping that this newsletter will find a different audience than perhaps the content had before?
Sure, that would be great. We would love to spread to as many audiences as we can and offer readers as many different venues as they can to get our stuff.
And why Tuesday? I think when people think of our opinion content or maybe Journal mm-hmm. Sentinel content in general, they might think of Sunday or Wednesday, since those tend to be our high volume print days. So what was the
right? It gives us a chance to look back at the previous week, and for example, we'll put it together next, and I'll put it together on Monday. And it'll give me a chance to look back the previous week and then figure out what's coming up for the week ahead. And that's easier to do, say, on Monday than it is on Friday. So we have a better view of what's coming up, and we'll have a better sense of what we can do. So.
And it's called, it's the real-time opinion newsletter, yes?
Yes.
And
that matches with a blog we just started as well.
There you go. And so if you were a community member and you maybe wanted to see one of your thoughts or opinions or hot takes represented in this newsletter, what's the best way to go about doing that?
Sign up for the newsletter.
Okay, well, other than signing up for it, if you wanted to see a piece you've written in the newsletter, is there a way that could happen?
A reader has?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we inform readers about if their stuff is online or in print, mm-hmm. And we provide links for that. So,
okay,
yeah.
Okay. So, reader content, letters to the editor, or mm-hmm. guest columns would be available in this as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And speaking of those, one of the things we wanted to talk about today was the way that you guys pick letters to the editor, because mm-hmm. that's a piece of content that is continuing in print on a larger scale, perhaps, than some of the other editorial content that has been condensed.
We do maintain a daily print package of letters, usually 2 to 3 letters, maybe not as many as before, but we, because of limited space. Nevertheless, we still maintain that presence on a daily basis, except for Saturdays. On Sundays, we also have Wednesdays. We have a regular editorial page, as we used to have, and there are a couple more letters there. And then on Sunday, we also have a larger letters package in the Crossroads section. The way we pick letters, and we get, you know, it varies. Lately, we've been in a drought, and I'm not exactly sure why, but we often get like 300 letters a week. So what we do is we take them to a stairwell, throw them down the stairs, and then the first 3 stairs get printed. No, I made that up. You know, we look for letters on topical issues. I'm sorry, issues that are in the news right now, well-written. Although, you know, if you want to have your, if you send your letter in crayon, you may not, you might not get in, but if it's a good opinion, it will. So we look for well-written topical issues. I think letters get, at least in print, my sense has always been, and I've been doing this for at least since Lincoln was president, that readers like letters to the editor. They're short, generally speaking. They're pithy opinions. They're like a quick stick in the eye, and you sort of, people like to read that kind of stuff. Maybe not as much on in online, but I think they still get some good readership. And we look for letters that promote that, you know, short, quick statements about stuff, 3 or 4 paragraphs sometimes. Sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little shorter.
Okay.
So that's what we go for.
And why were letters to the editor a piece of content that you wanted to keep in the traditional print product most days?
Yeah, I think because our print readers really like them.
Okay.
And they've liked them for a long time. And for some reason, their readership is not very high digitally on our digital products. But in print, they still seem to get a fair amount of reaction. We get letters reacting to letters a lot, and then that helps feed the mill. But it's something that print readers like, I think, and they want to keep seeing.
Okay, and I kind of like, you know, this is just from my vantage point, sitting in a different area of the newsroom, working in a different department, The fact that it feels very transparent to keep those, because some of the letters are about our coverage.
Right, and we like to keep letters, if we can, local. I mean, we want to, it's an avenue for a couple of things. People can spout out about Scott Walker or Mayor Barrett or Chris Abele or local issues. It's also a way for them to react to stories they've seen in the paper. Oh, we loved your coverage of mental health issues. You should get a Pulitzer for that. You guys really suck on this. You are liberal or conservative shills. So it is very much a venue for them to react to whatever we've got in print or online.
And if someone wanted to submit a letter to the editor, what's the best way to do so? And then, like, what are some hints you have in terms of construction of the actual letters?
Send it to jsedit@jrn.com. That's the best way. It is an email. We do accept, of course, letters sent to through snail mail. The address there is 333 West State Street, Journal Sentinel, 53203. And what we look for when you want to construct a letter, I mean, don't make it just a rant about something. I mean, have some good points to make. Letters that almost always get rejected is a letter from, you know, out of state about a general national issue, Trump or abortion or shootings or something like that. We like it to be a little more pertinent to the issues at hand. Now, if you're out of state and you're writing about something that appeared in the Journal Sentinel, yeah, that's got a good shot of getting in. And as for the construction, you know, it's sort of up to the reader. But make a point, I think, is one of the things I would advise. What is your point? And make sure you're clear about that. Don't rambling all over the place on 3 or 4 different issues. You know, it doesn't get you real far.
All right. Well, that is all of the questions I have. It's all the time I'm going to take up from you, Ernie.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. If you're interested in subscribing to our real-time opinion newsletter, you can do so at jsonline.com/newsletters. Again, that's jsonline.com/newsletters. That's all for today. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell, signing off for the week. Join me next week for more behind-the-scenes information from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field.
Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.